I said, what can I do to fix the problem? Because we all know it's a problem. Sometimes there are a lot of people out there who are can kickers who specialize in just kicking the can down the road. They're like, okay, we know it's a problem, but hey, it ain't my problem.
Welcome to the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Youngdyke. And I'm recording this in Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm here during the Outdoor Writers Association of America annual conference. And we had a great presentation yesterday in a panel discussion that featured Eric Morris with the Non-Typical Outdoorsman TV, which we'll tell you about in a little bit. And Eric is heavily invested in making sure that we diversify participation in hunting and fishing in the outdoors. And with some of the discussions that have been going on both within the Federation and throughout the conservation community, it seemed like a perfect chance to pick Eric's brain and see if there's some things that he can offer to help our affiliates, our state affiliates for the National Wildlife Federation, get started in this work. But more than anything, without me talking anymore, I wanted to introduce Eric. Eric, thank you for joining the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors podcast and for coming to Little Rock and speaking to the Outdoor Writers Association of America as well. Tell folks about yourself. How did you get into hunting and fishing? You had mentioned during your panel presentation that you didn't originally grow up hunting and fishing. Tell us about that. What brought you into the outdoors?
Okay. Well, I'm happy to be able to sit down with you and spend a few minutes talking about a topic that's very important. But to answer your question, I grew up in Alabama. You know, in Alabama and the South in general is a hunting area, so to speak. You know, that's what people do. But like I mentioned in the panel yesterday, you know, I did not grow up in a hunting family. My daddy did not hunt. You know, he would carry me fishing, but he really wasn't an outdoorsman. He, you know, grew up in Alabama also. But I've always had a yearning desire to go hunt. I often tell people that some of us are born hunters. And I think that is true, because you have a lot of people who are born with a natural ability to sing, mm-hmm. a natural ability to play an instrument, natural ability to draw. Some of us are born with a natural instinct to pursue and hunt something. And the reason why I think that is really true is because not only myself, but I've met other people, a lot of kids in particular, over the past few years who are just like me. Parents wonder where in the world did they come from. I'm, you know, almost 48 years old, and my parents are still wondering, where in the world did we get you from, son? And I've had other parents tell me the same thing about their kids. So some of us are born with that. But, you know, growing up, where I'm from, there are a lot of people that did hunt. However, you know, to give my parents credit, although my daddy was not a hunter, he tried to encourage me to go hunting with some of my older cousins, you know, who are my daddy's age or older. But yet, I still remember, like it was yesterday, I always turned down those opportunities at the time. And the reason why is because I wanted my daddy to take me hunting. You know, you see stuff on TV with, you know, the father and son going hunting, you know, and looking back at it, that's the main reason why. Now, looking back at it also, I kick myself in the butt for not going hunting with my older cousin. My older cousin is 70, the one that they wanted me to go with. He's about 75 right now, and he still hunts. He still gets 30 feet up in a tree stand and hunt deer. But, you know, I've always had the yearning to hunt, and as I got older, I kind of realized that there is a need to get more minorities and people of color into the outdoors.
And your hunting experiences have taken you, at least from the pictures that you were showing, all over the world. What do you find is that challenge within the outdoors? What are we currently lacking, and why is that important to fix?
Well, right now what we're lacking is racial diversity. A lot mm-hmm. of times, you know, in the outdoor industries, and I'm not shame or timid to say it, mm-hmm. we're not trying to fix outdoor diversity. Okay. The outdoors is already diverse. We're trying to fix racial diversity within the outdoors. A lot of people have to get comfortable saying the R word, you know, and a lot of people are uncomfortable saying the R word. But we're really trying to fix the issue of racial diversity within the outdoors, because right now, the room we're in right now is full of pictures of, you know, Fred Bear, other people, and I guarantee you, you can look around this whole store and not see a single black hunter's face anywhere in this store, and there's hundreds of pictures. That sends a message. Me, because here's the thing, the advantage that I have and that a lot of you all have by talking to me is that I am of the target market, of the target audience.
Okay.
I was that little 5, 6-year-old, 10, 12, 16-year-old boy that looked around and never saw anyone in outdoors that looked like him. I know what impact that had on me. I know what message that kind of sent to me, and I know what message that sent to those around me. So the issue that we have is not a outdoor diversity issue. It's okay. A racial diversity issue. And, you know, me going around, you know, I'll tell your listeners that I am retired from the Army. I'm a retired major from the Army. I retired about 3 years ago. And my duty assignments have carried me all over the United States and in many parts of the world, to include Iraq and Afghanistan. But as I would go around to different duty stations, the first places I would go is to the rotting gun clubs, you know, okay. to go hunt. And I would go there, and 9 times out of 10, I'm like the only black guy there. There may be a few other guys there occasionally, but for the most part, I would be the only black guy there. And the looks that you would get sometime, or that I would get, is as if people have seen a kangaroo bouncing down the interstate on a pogo stick. Like, whoa, wait a minute, what is that? You know, people are in disbelief sometimes, mm-hmm. and naturally so, because sometimes you don't see enough black people hunting. So therefore, when you see a guy come up that say, hey man, you know, I'm here to hunt, you know, how do I, you know, go through the process of hunting on Fort Bragg, on Fort Carson, or wherever you are, a lot of people are like, whoa, wait a minute. But I got kind of tired of, you know, of that appearance and of that response, I should say.
Okay.
And I said, what can I do to fix the problem? Because we all know it's a problem. Sometimes there are a lot of people out there who are can kickers who specialize in just kicking a can down the road. They're like, okay, we know it's a problem, but hey, it ain't my problem.
Right.
But me, you know, here I am of the target audience, a black guy who is a avid hunter, a very knowledgeable hunter. I'm a hunter education instructor in 2 states. And I feel that if I can't solve the problem, then the problem can't be solved, because I am, as I mentioned before, I'm America's strongest advocate of increasing racial diversity within the outdoors. You know, here I am in Little Rock, Arkansas, drove my car out here, you know, on my own bill, on my own, you know, my own dime. And it takes that kind of commitment to get the job done. But what I wanted to do is to try to find ways to increase the racial diversity within the outdoors, not just black folks, Hispanic folks, Asian folks, Native American folks, folks from the Middle East, because right now, a lot of people in the outdoor industry will say that hunting is a white man's sport. And a lot of people in those other ethnic communities, the demographic that a lot of people are trying to reach, they also see it that way.
Okay.
Why is that? Because when you turn on TV, all you see is, you know, as one guy described, white guy with beards.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock against white guys. I mean, hey, you know, all of us love to hunt. And if white guys love to hunt, then so be it. But I think that sometimes we can do a better job as how we portray hunting in the outdoors. Right now, I think we're missing the point, or missing the opportunity, I should say.
And just, you know, I used to work for our Michigan State affiliate, which was like a parent umbrella for independent rod and gun clubs mm-hmm. throughout the state. And part of my job is I would go around and speak at like the monthly meetings of the rod and gun clubs. Mm-hmm. And there was very little, if any at all, racial diversity in, mm-hmm. in a lot of those clubs.
Right.
And I think a lot of the clubs too have recognized the problem, mm-hmm. or at least acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. Finally, both the clubs and a lot of the state organizations too, I know, want to help increase racial diversity in the outdoors. But given where they're starting from, I think a lot of them feel like, okay, this is something we should do. We agree. Now what?
Yeah.
You've had a lot of success in introducing new people to hunting and fishing. What have some of your initiatives been, and how have you found success in doing that some of the state conservation organizations or some of the individual rod and gun clubs can take a lesson from and help do?
Okay. Well, the thing I mentioned earlier to someone this morning is that the advantage that I have as a free agent, an individual who does not work for any state or government organization, is that I can go places and say what needs to be said and do what needs to be done without fear of repercussions, without fear of losing my job, because I'm not sticking to the talking points of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, a lot of people know that there is room for improvement. They know that, you know, we need more diversity, but a lot of people don't know how to get started. So here's some of the things that I've done, because I'm the kind of guy, I hate just talking about stuff because, like I said, you know, I'm not a can kicker, you know.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, we know if it's a problem, let's fix it. If you got a hole in your roof and it's raining on you every night, then you can't say, yep, I got a hole in my roof. Yep, you gotta do something about it. Get up there, slap a tarp on it until you can get some more shingles to fix the hole. So that's my approach toward things. I'm a simple, down-to-earth guy. And I believe in addressing a problem and taking a problem head on. So what does that mean? That means that when I realize that there's a need for outdoor diversity, I said, where can I go to directly target and reach my audience, the communities? I always say, and you may have heard me say yesterday during the discussion, that, you know, what's more important, the message or the appearance of the messenger? The answer is the message. However, a lot of people would get hung up on the appearance of the messenger. So it helps sometimes to, it helps if the messenger looks like the target audience, or at least can relate to the target audience. Because I'm a black guy, I can go into a lot of different areas that some white guys can't. And not to say that there's a barrier, but I can go and assimilate into those areas with people because I look like them, I talk like them. We kind of have some of the similar experiences, no matter if they're black, Hispanic, or whatever. And some white guys may can, but a lot of times, you know, you have to have that comfort level.
Yeah.
And so what I do, I basically go into a neighborhood and stuff and or find some of the people in the community who have an interest in hunting. And I'll say, hey, guys, I'm here. Here's where I am. My name is Eric. I am an advocate of getting more racial diversity in the outdoors. I teach people how to fish, how to shoot, how to hunt, about dogs, about guns, the whole nine yards. Let's set up a meeting with people in the community at the rec center or somewhere and let me talk to them about the outdoors and set up a hunt where I can take those out.
So you're very deliberate about organizing and setting up events. It's not just one-off conversations, but you're going there, you're being direct, you're saying, here's what I'm here to do,
right?
And this is what I invite you to come
right.
do with me.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about these events. Where have you had success? And just tell folks about some of the ways that you have recruited new people to the outdoors.
I'll start by saying that, you know, there's a perception out there that a lot of black people and other people of color are not interested in hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true. You have some black people out there and people of color who are not interested in hunting, just as you have some white people who are not interested in hunting. So basically what I do is I go to some of the successes I've had has been Killeen, Texas, where I founded an organization called Black Wolf Hunting Club, and we partnered with the state of Texas to help run more hunts, because Texas, Texas, all states have their challenges,
mm-hmm.
but I think that Texas has made a good faith effort to try to fix the problem, not just talk about it. So we were able to set up a few hunts where we took youth out, but I had a group of guys that were committed to help putting on events, because whenever we put on an event, we put it on, we sponsor it, we run the show.
Okay.
It's important for your target audience to see people like them in charge running the show. If not, they're going to see you as the figurehead or the puppet and say, okay, well, yeah, you know, Eric's just here, but he ain't really, you know, he's just here, but all the other 600 guys here are white, you know, and so why is it more of them of us? Those kind of things pop up, but to follow up on that, though, just because a guy is white does not mean that he's not committed to increasing diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you are yourself, because you're sitting here talking about diversity, and some guys choose not to even talk about the issue, so it's obvious that you care. But other areas of success I've had was in Kansas City when I was at Fort Leavenworth. I was same process. Here's who I am. Here's what I'm here to do. Let's set up a meeting time. I went to the community center, put a flyer up. You know, who come learn to hunt.
Okay.
And put a flyer up. And here's my number. People call. And, you know, I had as many as like 15 people meeting. And I just don't focus on kids.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, adults, any race, any nationality. And I took, in between the years of 2014 hunt season and 2015 hunt season, I introduced 32 individual people to hunting.
Oh, that's awesome. And you know, because hunting participation has been dropping across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, state wildlife agencies, conservation organizations seem to be racking their heads saying, you know, we're losing who's always kind of appeared in the hunting population. We're losing. How do we stop it? How do we stop it? How do we stop it? And you're saying,
just like this. Yeah. You introduce new people to it, and I think for some of the clubs, you know, yeah, folks that have grown up in a very specific hunting culture, mm-hmm. and their perception of hunting culture, even from within it, is this is what hunting culture looks like. Mm-hmm. How important is it for folks to understand that hunting is an activity that you do, and all the cultural trappings around it might not necessarily need to be tied to that activity, and they kind of need to drop kind of their own preconceived notions to jump out and accept new people into hunting who might have different perceptions of hunting, might approach it from a different way. How have you found the reception to that from within, you know, clubs and organizations that you've worked with?
Well, you know, there's hunting has a culture, but each region of the country has a culture.
Yeah,
I'm from Alabama. Yeah. I'm a country boy. I mean, you can't get any more country than Alabama, in the South. But some people, for instance, when it comes to hunting, some people think that hunting is growing up. I'll use this as an example. Growing up in the late '70s, early '80s. Hunting season you can tell when hunting season was around because you see people riding around town with deer on the trucks and, you know, hanging off the hood of the trucks and, you know, dressed up in camouflage, going to the stores with blood all on their clothes and gutted the deer. Yep. And for the most part, people within the outdoor industry today have tried to get away from that because that does not give hunting a good look when you have that kind of stuff. So you have to be mindful of the people who don't hunt. But with culture, you know, one thing, for instance, some people see hunting as a backwoods rural activity. A lot of people let's talk about race again with black people. A lot of black people who are struggling to try to separate themselves from the stigma of ignorance and illiteracy and just being backwards or whatever, or not as equal or good as some of the other white people, you know, I met people who go out of their way to distance themselves from hunting and stuff that would give the appearance that they may be backwoods or whatever. I on the other hand, embrace it. But the culture, I will mention too, like some people for a hunt, they may sit around and drink beer at the fire and play the banjo or the guitar or whatever and sing country music. That may be what they do in that particular segment, but if you look at somebody from the outside, you know, say, hey, you know, that's not me, you know, that's a bunch of redneck guys or whatever. And these guys may not at all be redneck. They just may be good guys that's out there just playing a guitar. But sometimes you want to portray hunting in a certain light. And hunting, like I said, in America is portrayed primarily as a white person's sport. I would give you $100 bill if you can walk around the store and find a black face of all these hunting pictures in here. They're not any. Sometimes people are so accustomed to the status quo, so accustomed to seeing the story and history told a certain way that they are reluctant to change their ways of portraying certain things.
How important is that for somebody who doesn't currently participate in hunting to want to get into it? Because, you know, and I'm your classic white dude with a beard, mm-hmm. right? Although the beard's not very good, but yeah. I'm working on it. But, you know, I can look around this room that we're in, uh-huh. and I see dudes that look like me.
Yeah. And what message does that send to you? What is that? Well, what feeling does that give you?
And it's something that, when you grow up with it and when it's always been there, mm-hmm. you don't think about it much because you take it for granted.
Right.
And I think for white dudes with beards like me that grew up in it, sometimes we'll say, okay, but why is that important? Like, I don't need to look like that. Like it's just the outdoors. It's there for mm-hmm. everyone. And I think we sometimes approach it from that way simply because we've always had images and role models of mm-hmm. people that look like us. Mm-hmm. So much that we've just taken for granted the importance of that. How important is that to make sure that, and especially those of us within outdoor communication mm-hmm. in media, to make sure that we're accurately and genuinely portraying racial diversity within the outdoors? How important is that to recruiting new people mm-hmm. to it?
It's very important. Okay. Because a lot of times people are drawn to things that they see themselves doing or people that look like them doing. It can be tremendously inspiring for a person of color to see someone portrayed in a picture or on TV that looks like them. Like I said, the advantage you have of talking to me right now is that I am that guy from that audience who was a black guy, little black boy from Alabama who never saw anybody. I grew up in the days of watching Roland Martin on TV, Jimmy Houston, all those guys, and I would get up and just love fishing. But I often talk about how a picture is worth a thousand words. It is truly, truly motivating and inspiring to see someone who looks like you reflected. And I'm not, I mean, we're talking about this in the hunting arena, but I've heard other black movie directors or Asian actors, and they say the same thing. I mean, everybody knows that. By seeing just a simple picture of someone who looks like you can inspire you to do things that you otherwise wouldn't try because you never see anybody. So I think it's very important. Now, for the listeners out there, that doesn't mean that because you're a white guy that you can't draw in other people. The way you get around that and attract people who don't look like you to hunting is to, one, build credibility. Credibility is key. I heard a story one time at a conference where, and I can relate, when the guys told me the story, I said, you know what, I've heard this, I've experienced this, I've lived it. He was a white guy who was a hunter in Alabama. A factory had closed down in North Carolina, and some people moved down to hunt in, come to Alabama. He met a black guy, one of the employees that worked there at the factory, because the guy was a supervisor, and the black guy found out the white guy was a hunter. He said, hey man, I always wanted to go hunt. He said, okay, here's what we'll do. I'll take you hunting this coming season. We go out, get you a deer. He said, so they talked about it, during the summer and everything, and so as it got closer to hunting season, they had set a date to go to the range. The guy, the supervisor, bought a rifle. And his intent was to let the guy, because the guy didn't have a rifle, the black guy didn't have a rifle. So he bought a rifle, was going to let the guy shoot the rifle, sight it in, get used to shooting it. And then at the hunt, after they got him a deer, he was going to let him have that rifle, which I thought was great. But the guy told me that I think a day or two before they supposed to go to the, range, he called the guy, hey man, you still good for the range? No, man, I ain't going to be able to make it. He said, why? What happened? We've been talking about this for months. Well, man, my auntie said he's going to get me out there and shoot me. So that kind of stuff happens, and that's, that I shook my head. I was like, yep, I done heard that before, because there's a lot of attention sometimes and mistrust between the different races. And America has a long history of racial violence and tension between blacks and whites, and a lot of us are trying to get past that. We like, okay, we heard that, it happens. I mean, back in the day it happened, but today is a new day. But a lot of times the things that has happened down through the years tend to trickle and be carried on with the rumors and the boogeyman stories by people from older generations. So, but I would encourage you guys out there who is listening, who want to try to make a difference, to go out, build credibility with your audience, let them see you for who you are, and, make those connections. And all it takes is one or two people to go out. And so if one of you guys out there happen to go take a person, and don't be, focusing just on the guys. I focus a lot on the women and the girls, because the men, if you teach a woman how to shoot or a girl how to shoot, it's only a matter of time before a man or two will be out there with her doing the same thing, even if he don't know how to shoot, because, it's just part of nature. But if you guys go out there and build credibility with a person, let them see you for who you are, let them know that you're sincerely concerned and interested in teaching them about hunting the outdoors, then go ahead and do it, because they'll tell their friends, hey, I went with Mr. Fred, or I went with Mr. Brian, and he taught me how to shoot, and Mr. Brian and Mr. Fred's a good guy. So that's one way they can reach that market.
And, you mentioned about having those images of folks that you can relate to, mm-hmm. outdoing what you want to do. Mm-hmm. You now have a new venture where you are providing that. You are walking the walk. Yeah. Tell us about your new venture, your new non-typical outdoorsman.
Okay. Well, last fall, going back about maybe 3 years ago, I had the idea of having an outdoor show. Because right now, I watch Pursuit Channel, Outdoor Channel, all these shows, and you never see anybody on TV that looks like me. You never see anybody that's Hispanic or anything. I think there's one or two guys out there that you see. But for the most part, you don't see any diversity, any racial diversity out there. So I've known that black people have always hunted. Going back to the picture right quick of a picture worth a thousand words, I have become so obsessed with researching black hunters and the hunting history among black people that I've bought books. I'm writing my own book, actually. But some of the people I discovered in doing my research have been inspirational to me, and they've been dead almost 100 years. One person's Holt Collier. A lot of people don't know about Holt Collier, but Holt Collier was a former slave down in Mississippi, who is probably hands down the most famous yet unknown black bear hunter of all times. He's his actions led to the making of the teddy bear. He guided Teddy Roosevelt on a black bear hunt in 1902 in Mississippi, and make a long story short, he told the president, "Mr. President, hey, if you sit here, I guarantee you my dogs will run a bear by your blind before sundown." And it got kind of late in the day. The aide told the president, "Ma, no bears coming through here. Let's go on back to the camp." And so they got up and left. Sure enough, shortly after they left, bear come right through there. Holt Collier was a black guy and a former slave at the time. He had a lot of pressure riding on him. From doing the research, that was one of the rare moments that I heard about where black people ran the show for the hunt. The president of the United States coming down, but Holt Collier and his other black guys was running the show. So pressure was on him to succeed. The landowner who, you know, owned the land, the plantation that he was on, his whole family has been on for generations, he had a lot riding on him for Holt to succeed too, because after all, you have the president of the United States on your property for a hunt. So Holt had the pressure on him. The next day, bears came out. Dogs were released. They bayed a bear. Holt Collier, because he wanted to make sure the president got a shot, he stepped in, threw a rope around the bear's neck, and tied him off to a tree and sent one of the other guys to go get the president. Teddy came out. He saw the bear tied to the tree, and he said, "I can't shoot that. That's not fair chase." A lot of us who are into hunting and outdoors hear about fair chase, and
yep.
Theodore Roosevelt was big in the fair chase, so he refused to shoot the bear because it wasn't fair chase. But the word got back to Washington, D.C. One of the cartoonists in the areas at the time drew a bear tied to a tree and called it Teddy's Bear. A toy maker at the time, also in the area, made a stuffed bear. And as they say, the rest is history. It's been sitting like hotcakes with teddy bears.
But you know, as growing up and reading about conservation history, a lot of hunters, I think, have heard that story from Teddy Roosevelt's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You hear about Teddy wouldn't shoot the tied up bear.
Yeah. Who tied it up?
But we never heard about
Holt
that part of it. And we never heard about, you know, if you hear that, you think, well, why would somebody do that? Well, now you understand the power dynamics at play.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that untold story, mm-hmm. I think, is so important for people to hear. I'm really excited for people to watch your TV show.
Yeah, None to Blood Those TV.
Where will people be able to find that?
Okay, I kind of got diverted off subject a little bit with the story about Holt Collier. I'm going to tell them about the show, and then I'll tell them where you can find it.
Yeah.
But there are not any TV shows out there with people of color, I'll put it that way, with diversity. Because, you know, there's nothing wrong with white guys hunting. I mean, I hunt with white guys myself. I mean, you look forward to the annual hunts that we do. However, and if we're going to solve the problem, I believe that by having a show with a host and a producer or someone of color that can put together a show that will appeal to a wide audience of viewers from all nationalities to give a true representation of what America is like, I think that would be monumental and can basically change the game when it comes to diversity. So I was thinking, and I went ahead and I'm working on the show now as we speak. I have, after I leave here, I have to go to Kansas City to interview a girl. But realizing that there is not a lot of diversity out there, I believe that I can make a huge impact towards diversity when it comes to showcasing hunters, fishermen, shooters, archers, hunters and gatherers of all nationalities. Because from my world, and my world I live in, I see people like me hunting. I see Hispanic people hunting. I see white people hunting. But in a lot of white people's world, in the circles that they run in, they don't see us. Just like the story with Holt Collier.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. People probably don't even know who Holt Collier is. They heard about the teddy bear thing, but they don't know that a black man was behind that. He caused that. But a lot of people are probably thinking, hey, you know, the show is going to probably just be a bunch of black folks on there hunting. Nah, it's going to be some black people. But it's going to be a lot of other people also, women, men, kids. And I think that is what is needed. And a lot of people realize it's what is needed. But right now, honestly, I'm having a hard time getting sponsors, getting people to support the show. Now, once the show airs, because it's going to air one way or another, it's scheduled to air October 5th on the Pursuit Channel.
Okay.
Right now, the air times are slated for 3 p.m. on Saturdays, starting from October 10th to December, and 5 a.m. on Mondays. Also, it'll be on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest, which will also cover the region we are here in Arkansas and Little Rock. It'll be seen here, Texas, and a few other places. But, you know, once the show is launched and once people see the impact that it's making, and with diversity, and causing more people to want to get out there, because seeing is believing. And seeing someone like me on the show, or seeing a Hispanic person on the show, or seeing a white woman on the show, or an elderly Asian woman on the show fishing or hunting, that's gonna be the, hey, if they can do it, then why aren't I doing it? So, you know, it's gonna be a good show. I mean, I'm putting everything I have, my reputation is on the line for this show, because there's a huge need for what I'm about to do. And a lot of people talk about it. A lot of people, well, yeah, yeah. But here's an opportunity for people to support and be part of the solution to a problem.
Awesome. Eric, thank you for joining the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast. Folks, make sure that when it comes out in early October, you go check out the Pursuit Channel and check out the Non-Typical Outdoorsman TV.
There you go.
Where else can folks reach you?
Well, I will give you my direct email address. You can reach me at my cell phone. I will give you that first. My cell phone number is 405-473-3506. That's my direct number. And although I live just outside of Atlanta, Georgia, I've kept my Oklahoma number ever since I was stationed in Oklahoma back in the day. So my email address you can reach me is nontypicaloutdoorsman, all one word, @outlook.com. So that's how you can get in contact with me. If any of you guys have any questions, any you know, just want to talk or want to support the show and my endeavors, then please give me a call.
Great. This has been the National Wildlife Federation Outdoors Podcast, as always supported by Rep Your Water, which helps our campaign to keep Asian carp out of the Great Lakes.
Yeah,
I've been your host, Drew Youngdyke. Thank you.